Welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast, where we dive into the many aspects, challenges, and life-changing lessons that are part of our spiritual awakenings. Through conversations, we are looking to bring you wisdom and perspectives so that you feel more supported and connected as you navigate your own awakening path. We are your hosts, Kate McGee and Amanda Richardson-Meyer. We've both been through our own unique awakening journeys that have changed and transformed our lives. And through these awakening conversations, we will be growing and expanding alongside you. We're so glad to have you join us. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Awakening Conversations podcast. My name is Kate. I'm here with my co-host Amanda. And today we are joined by Shadi Sadeghi. And Shadi is a very interesting human who is going to be sharing with us some incredible things. Shadi is a certified life coach in Jungian psychology and emotion code practitioner. She has over 15 years of personal development experience. Shadi's method combines depth psychology, Eastern philosophy, social neuroscience, and emotional energy work to guide her clients through the transformative process, awakening to their true selves. Through this mind-body-soul journey of powerful conscious action, coupled with the infinite intelligence of the unconscious mind, she empowers men and women all over the world to release their past conditioning and traumas and manifest success in health, love, and career with more ease, confidence, and freedom. Shadi, welcome to the Awakening Conversations podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. We'd like to begin with understanding a bit about your journey that led you to become someone who works as a Jungian coach. And then we're going to dive into what that is all about, how it pertains to the awakening, and many of the processes that we experience on awakening, like looking at our shadow, dark nights of the soul, manifesting all the things. So if you want to start at the start for us and paint a picture of how this came to be the profession that you're doing.
Totally not planned. Totally unexpected, and that's kind of how it works, right? I would say the journey started with my own personal development journey, which informally started probably when I was 12. I went to my mom and I'm like, what religion are we? Because we don't really practice anything. So I was seeking, right? I was seeking something. And she very open-mindedly told me to explore religions on my own and to choose one on my own. And I did, and it felt very limiting. Religion, any religion I really, you know, read about or felt part of, or groups that I would, you know, befriend, felt very limiting. So I think I was on a spiritual quest my whole life, pretty early on. And I always felt like my heart and my soul knew there is more to life than this. There is more to life than just checking off the boxes, you know, choosing a university, going to university, getting the 9-to-5 job, picking a house, you know, in the suburbs, and getting married and having 2.5 kids. I just always knew there was more to life than this. But you know, your heart may feel that, but your logic, your mind is still like, okay, but I still, you know, I need to get a job. I still need to, mom and dad expect me to do X, Y, Z, you know? And so you kind of are led by your conditioning for the first half of your life. And then, I kept having, repetitive patterns. So I basically noticed that I'm the common denominator in like having the same jobs that didn't feel fulfilling, or having the same relationships or dating experiences that weren't fulfilling. And so I started to more formally go inward in my late 20s. And when I started, you know, reading personal development, personal growth books, doing therapy, and I still felt like I was going in circles. And it was really in my, by my mid 30s, I found a Jungian coach, and I started to read about the unconscious mind. I read The Secret, and I was like, okay, that's cool, but it didn't really work. The Secret, and I was like, okay, that's bogus. But then I got this Jungian coach that the shifts were like within months, what would be, you know, years in like a more therapy model was sheer months with my Jungian coach, because we were working with the root of what was holding me back and how I was holding myself back in certain experiences, life experiences, or really going after what I wanted. And so that was transformative. And when I started seeing the coach, then I was like, you know what? I want to learn how to do this myself, for myself. It was purely selfish. So they, my mentors had started a program themselves. It's called the Creative Mind University. And I got trained, I got coached and trained and certified. And I was still thinking, okay, this is cool. I'm going to just do this on my own. And I was still receiving mentorship and making a lot of great changes in my life, doubled my salary and had an incredible international, very prestigious, amazing growth in my professional career. Dating was different. I was having deeper relationships, friendships evolved, but then I hit another wall. And I just was like, I think that's really when my awakening happened. So the Jungian coaching, what it was, and I didn't realize it consciously at the time, what it was taking me through the individuation process, which is Jung's approach or the Western approach to spiritual awakening. But I see it as more of like, this is the path to becoming your whole true self, but in a modern world. You know, it's not like shipping me off to like, you know, the woods somewhere or a monastery and, you know, being zened out and like awakening to my soul. This is more of a practical approach. And so I was receiving it. I was trained in it. I was understanding my mind better, seeing the world different. And then the shift just happened and my awakening happened. And I left corporate and I didn't look back. I moved abroad. And then that brings me to really starting. I actually formally started my business before I moved abroad, before I left corporate. And this is what I do full time now.
So how long has it been since the awakening, leaving corporate world? How long has it been since then? So
I left the corporate world in 2021, the end of 2021. And I bought a one-way ticket to Italy after that. And I was planning to live abroad for a year and be a digital nomad and really learn how to work for myself and learn how to launch a business. And I wanted to coach others to really pursue their dreams and just make the kind of leaps that I had made. But at the time, I didn't know. I don't see an awakening happening at one time. We have little, it's like, you know,
I have big ones, but there's an unraveling, right?
There's an unraveling. I was going to say death by a thousand cuts, but I don't want to make it
that.
Right. And it is, it was, and I was going through it because I had identified so much with my hometown. I had identified so much with those friends. I had identified so much with corporate world, having a safety net in that sense. And it was all gone. Completely gone. The beauty of it was I was living my dreams abroad in Europe, beautiful Europe, amazing food, you know, beautiful people, language, you know, but it was the unraveling was beginning, and it continued through my move to California. I knew eventually I would want to land here. And so I moved here after my time abroad. It's still continuing, to be honest. I actually had a dark night. I've had a few and I didn't know what they were through probably since my early 20s. And I had a really, really big one. I call it the last push, not the last push, but because there will be more, you know, but I call it like the big aha moment over the last year. And I reflect my journey on a personal level with the collective. I believe that everyone is going through it since COVID. On some level, I see it reflected. The only difference is I just know too much because I've studied it all and I've been trained in it. So I know exactly when it's happening, what it's happening, you know, when it's happening, what's happening, when it hits. And when you're in the thick of it, oh my God, it's like brutal. And because you feel like you're dying, you feel like everything is ending, but it's not true. And so I'm like observing myself, feeling like I'm dying and this is the end. And I don't, you know, it's just wild. It's so wild. And I'm like, I have to help people through this. I have to, like, they have to.
Can you speak to, for people who may not be familiar with Jungian psychology and the concept of the collective unconscious,
yes.
Can you start to unpack that so those listening can get a little deeper glimpse of what that is?
Absolutely. So Jung called the process of becoming whole and awakening to our true self individuation. What that meant was individuating from your upbringing, from your cultural conditioning, your family conditioning, your societal conditioning, and really learning the truth of who you are, which is not just human, not just our job or our accomplishments, but also divine. We have a divine nature to us, and we have a soul to us. And so there is the process is life itself, but in the modern world, and when when you look at ancient cultures and traditions, a lot of the pathway to helping people become more whole, helping men and women, you know, from childhood, essentially going through the milestones or initiations, you know, if they're in a tribe or in a community, those don't really exist anymore in the modern world. Mm-hmm. And so we're not, you know, from Jung's perspective, and by the way, Jung, you know, he did his work. The peak of his work was like in the early 1900s, 1930s, 1940s, 1950s. He saw that then. And he saw that essentially we're all like toddlers in adult bodies. We're not psychologically evolving and maturing the way that, you know, say you had to in a Native American tribe. You were raised by the community and you had initiations and challenges and you were taught how to overcome those challenges. So really, life is showing us, or our souls are unconsciously showing us how we can evolve and grow. But we see it, for the most part, because of how we're conditioned, we see it as just like bad things happening or challenges. And we haven't properly, I think the majority of people have not been properly equipped with how to use these experiences for their growth. And we've been kind of stuck in ego, which is a defense mechanism. So it's a false identity. It's essentially the mask that we were taught unconsciously to put on so that we can survive in our family unit. We can survive, you know, in school. We can survive in our culture, in society at that point. And it's very subjective. So the personal unconscious is essentially let me rewind. So let's go back. We're all born as a pure soul, pure divine power. Okay. This, I believe that we all have a soul print that's unique to us individually. We all have an experience that we are meant to have, or we're meant to uncover that soul as adults and express it in the world in a way that lights us up and makes us happy. All right. And fulfilled. And, but what happens is between 0 and 8, we have, life happens. We have childhood experiences. We have traumas. We have experiences. You know, we have perceptions of our parents, of who we think they are and how much safety can they give us? And also, how will I survive? Right. It's a very primitive response that we have as we grow up as children, observing our surroundings, observing how particularly when we observe parents and parental styles and responses, we identify more with one parent than the other because we see who has more power and who's going to survive. This is like totally primitive, right? This is the brain. And so we adopt an identity. We decide whether it's conscious or unconscious that being, you know, extroverted is not okay in my family. I need to be more introverted and quiet, particularly as women and girls, right? We're taught to be more accommodating and accommodating to other people, putting our needs on the back burner. So we adopt this more introverted identity. Whatever is not that, the opposite, which is extroversion or speaking our truth, gets repressed, gets pushed away, rejected or denied. And that's what goes into our personal unconscious. And that is what Jung called the shadow. So it does not mean it's bad. It does not mean that it doesn't mean that that's who we really are. We're actually both. Funny, Jung said that we are more of our shadow traits than our mask or ego identity traits. But we are both, right? But we don't know it. We go through the first half of our lives thinking that I am fill in the blank, whatever we decided was for our survival, essentially, and social acceptance. And what happens, though, is that energy is alive. That energy is active and it's repressed. And so what happens is we project it outwards. We project it onto our relationships, onto our jobs, onto various experiences. And this is emotional energy. So if it was not okay to express anger, which for 99.9% of human beings, we've all been conditioned on some level to repress anger, not show it, not express it, then that energy is repressed and it's active in our unconscious mind. And so typically it will drive our behavior unknowingly, unconsciously, or we will project it onto other people. So we tend to attract angry situations or situations that make us angry. Through the process of shadow work, which is what I take my clients through, we are kind of bringing that iceberg above water, the part that is hidden. It is the journey of knowing thyself and integrating those parts. You're not becoming them necessarily, or you're not, you know, or killing them or canceling them or fixing them. You're literally just bringing the iceberg above water. And the more you do this, the more conscious you become, the more aware you become, the more free you become, so that you can start to create life from that true self, that soul print that is you, instead of what does mom and dad expect me to do? What does society expect me to do? What does my husband want me to do? You become your true self through that process.
And not an easy process.
No, it's not, but it's happening anyway, right? Life is always showing us how we can, growth experiences. I think Kate and I, we were talking earlier. I mean, life is showing us where and how we can grow all the time. It's just most people don't think that. Most people think life is happening to them. Mm-hmm. But our experience is very subjective. Our perception of reality is just ours. It's based on our conditioning. It's colored by our conditioning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the more we really start to take accountability for that, that we are creating everything in our reality, then we can work with what's coming up and we can integrate what is repressed and become more and more in touch with our essence, our truth.
Do you want to go?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I will. I'll speak to that because my own awakening was a dark night of the soul and an ego death. And I've said before, it's not that my ego died. It was what died was this way it expressed itself and a whole massive story that I had running of how my life was, you know, and like it was such a like night and day experience for me to even understand I had an ego. And to literally my conversation with the person I worked with, he was asking me these series of questions and I was telling this story of my life and how wronged I'd been by my husband moving us to Japan and opening a hotel and, you know, and I was waiting for this sympathy on the other side, which I didn't get. And he's like, you're not telling me the truth. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's asked me, tell me the story again. And I kept telling this story, like the story. The story my ego's telling. Yeah. Of like how things were. And he's like, that's not it. It's not the truth. Keep going. And it wore me down to the point where I heard myself say something that hit like so deeply that I was just like, wow, that felt awful to kind of get to the truth of things. And then he's like, okay, now you're telling the truth. And it was this unraveling through these conversations where by the end of this session, I've described it as feeling like I got into a fight, like a fist fight, and someone punched me so hard that this other part of me fractured off. And all of a sudden I had this like split in my mind of like, whoa, there's something else running the show here. And that was like, it felt like an exorcism over the next few sessions of like, this blowing of my mind that this is purely my perception, a way of thinking that is purely clouded the view of what's really happening on the other side of my life. You know, it was a lens that I was projecting onto my life that I was like, this is my life. This is the story. This is why it's happening. And when that went away and I could see actually, no, there's a whole other kind of life going on.
There's possibility. That lens you were holding on to. Yeah. And we all hold on to it. And that's why it's the dark night, because we don't want to let go. So it's like our soul is like, surrender to it, let it go. Mm. It's not all that you are. You can be those things too. You can still have those stories, but you don't need to buy into them. The stories will still be there. They never go away. Yeah. They still don't go away for me. So it's just, I noticed that too. It's like the suffering is in resisting letting go of this past person that we thought we were and that we want to hold on to. But wait, there's so much more to life Mm-hmm. And there's so much more potential. And that's when manifestation comes in and all that stuff. But wow, that's painful. It is painful, but it is when you're on the other side, then you're looking back and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I lived that way. Or I can't believe I thought that way. And I can't believe I was buying into, like, just, I call it like we tolerate so much when we're unhealed. And I don't say unhealed as in we're broken, but I mean, we're not whole yet. And we tolerate a lot. We tolerate like, okay, well, this is just the way the world works. And so this is just what I have to do. I actually have been told by family members and friends that I live on a different plane and the world just doesn't work the way that Shadi works. And we're just living in Shadi's world. And I was like, you're damn right. And thank God. And I'm like, yeah, because look at the world. Look at the hell on earth right now. And I don't say that like, you know, it's just that we're all creating, we're all collectively. And so back to your question, sorry, Amanda, about the collective unconscious. So Jung said that when you do bring the iceberg above water, and as you are individuating and integrating the personal unconscious, your shadow, then you start to access the deeper parts, which is that we're all connected. We are all like at the bottom of the ocean. We're all one, we're all awareness, we're all pure awareness, and we're all connected. And so the more conscious you become, then you start to tap into the collective unconscious. And that is where intuition comes through. That is where ideas come through. I mean, $1 million ideas, inspiration, art, expression, it comes from the collective, and it comes from us as well. I mean, it's part of our soul print, but that is when you start to tap into the magic that we are, and synchronicities start to happen. And you start, if you're actively engaged with yourself and setting intentions and aware of your own patterns, because those ego patterns, the fear will always be there, then you can really start to manifest a lot more quickly.
I'm going to tell a little story about something recently regarding Jung. So synchronicity has been a big part of my personal journey, my awakening. And I just imagine that this is how everything works because it's kind of normal. And so I was going to start writing about synchronicity, and I started doing some research about it because it's, all of it has been from just what I've experienced. And so I wanted to like, what else is out there? And so I realized that Jung is coined that term, actually, synchronicity. So then videos about Jung started coming up in my YouTube feed. And there was one about synchronicity. And it was late at night and I was not really fully engaged. I was doing some other work, so I wasn't fully engaged. But this piece of information just popped out of me. It was about how he foresaw World War I before it happened. I studied the gene keys, and what popped into my head without not thinking was gene key 41, which is my life's work. And it's all about the quantum field, the morphogenetic field. I'm like, does he have number 41 in his gene keys? So then I was felt this urge to go look up what's his birthday. I said, okay, he's six months exactly from my birthday. I'm like, I bet he has that in his genius sequence. And then so I looked up his profile, and yes, he does. He has that. We have the same genius sequence of the same four gene keys. And I was like, wow, that was wild. And then Jung has always popped up. I studied psychology for my undergrad, and he's always come up in my journey, but I just assume because he's such a prominent figure that happens for everyone. And I was like, hey, Kate, is he always popping up for you? She's like, no. And I was like, oh, okay. Maybe I'm supposed to go deeper and learn more of his work because, you know, all of these things that I just think are, you know, everyone's being exposed to this information, but really it's like starting to pay attention to like what information is in our field is what is going to help us in that individuation process, right? To become our most authentic selves is really like paying attention to what wants to come into what's naturally in our field, that's where our growth comes versus just dismissing it as like, oh, that's just everyone has that in their field. But no, it was like paying attention. That's like gold information about who we are and what, where our path can go. So that's just something that recently, like in the past month, happened. And so, and now you're here. So I get to hear from you.
More synchronicities.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. Well, have you been setting an intention, or if you have you had like desires recently to anything in particular, expand in some way?
I think I'm always doing that to some degree. Yeah. But I don't want to say I have like a,
like you said,
a set practice, but when I meditate,
do you have a vision board? Do you do any of that stuff?
Vision, I don't know if vision boards work the best for me. Like that's,
yeah,
I haven't really, that hasn't worked for me.
I mean, that's
yeah,
popular right
it's
now.
It's more like in my meditation, and it's like when I really, an experience that I've had a lot is when there's something that I'm sensing I need or I want, but there's part of me that's like, no, you can't have that. And then I can go into meditation and shift those blocks of like, yeah, what is the identity that is associating with me not being able to have that within a very short amount of time. It's like this new identity can now have that. And that's a different reality that I can create.
Yeah.
So I've been playing with that in the, probably the last like 6 months to a year more consciously, but I think it was happening unconsciously previously, kind of more out of my like conscious control.
Well, so the thing is that, have you heard of the reticular activating system?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a filter in our brain that, but it needs guidance. So if we have a negative mindset already, which most people do until they have an awakening or until they really start to question and inquire, go inwards and inquire, is this the truth of who I am, right? Most people have a negative slant and bias. And the reticular activating system is like a filter that will input and take in information correlating with your mindset already. But once you expand awareness, and as you're like literally expanding awareness, your filter just gets bigger. So your RAS, I'm going to call it the RAS, the RAS essentially expands, but it needs direction. So if you already are doing the work, and if you're setting intentions and you're saying, this is the path I want to go, this is what feels good to me, or I love to have XYZ, I want to have more XYZ, your soul is essentially guiding you by expanding your lens to input information, experiences, people, situations. This is where your intuition kicks in, right? That are aligned with those things. So it could be that those young videos were always there, Amanda, right? They could have always been there, but your RAS wasn't picking them up. Now they are. And it's the same with like, I mean, I know, you know, if people are looking for a job that's like more aligned with their soul, they probably could be walking by like an ad or a place of work that could be the best place for them, but they're not picking it up unless they expand the awareness.
Yeah, it was just a simple example that popped in my head from what you just said. So one day my daughter needed some boots for her theater performance, and we live in Mexico, central Mexico, and it's kind of like finding things is like an adventure. Like things that you need, you can find it, but it's like a scavenger hunt that you're going to go on. You go one place and like, do you have this? And like, no, go over there. And you go look and no, but go try over this place. And so it can be fun, and it can also be tiring. And so one day we were looking for these boots that she was just going to wear one time. I didn't really want to buy her brand new boots for this experience. And so we looked at a bunch of places, and we're walking down the street, and I'm like, man, I'm kind of over this looking for boots. And I'm like, okay, the boots are going to come. And I just, something shifted. We walked further down. There's always on Saturdays, these garage sales. People are always having garage sales here. And the first one, we walk in, one pair of boots, they fit her. Good price. And it was like this shift. Yeah. And it's like, there we go. We're here. And so when it happens and when you acknowledge it, it's like,
incredible. It's like mind blowing every time. Like, holy crap. That's the power. I mean, that is the power. We can tap into that power anytime. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, Shadi, for people that are listening to this and being like, wow, that sounds amazing. I want to do that in my life.
Yeah.
you know, as you said, you know, we wanting to, as you did with your hands, like broaden that sense of awareness, our conscious awareness. Now, you used an example of like wanting to have a more soul aligned job. When our consciousness is still sort of in a sort of, let's say, limited space, yes. You know, we still have those beliefs that, Absolutely. You know, more isn't quite possible. What are the things we can actually be doing to help ourselves work to broaden that awareness? You know, what are the practical things people can be doing so that we can widen the parameters of what our potential is to be able to begin to work with that, to then sort of start to have those amazing experiences that Amanda has, to like literally think it and manifest it in the moment? Like, how can we work with that to begin to then play with this idea of manifestation that you're really talking about?
So I think it really just depends on where someone is in their personal development journey. So if someone is resistant at all or really hasn't done a lot of personal development, and that's fine too. What I really actually with anyone. So shadow work is hard to do on yourself, but really the first step of essentially becoming more whole so that you can tap into the collective unconscious, this intuition, this flow, being more soul aligned is shadow work. You cannot bypass it, which now that I live in Southern California, I see so many people that bypass really the hard inner work, and they just slap on a spiritual identity and they say, yeah, I'm love and light and positive vibes and this is who I am. But that's just another ego tactic, right? Mm. So it requires shadow work. Shadow work is looking at your triggers. What triggers you? Or what do you judge about people? So that is pointing to something that is hidden within you and in your unconscious and in your shadow. Beginning to question why you judge it. What's so bad about this trait? Or, you know, why does my boss trigger me so much? You know, it's because she's always speaking up and taking credit. So is it possible that maybe I'm not doing that in my own life? Why? Well, because my mom always said I couldn't speak up and da-da-da, you know, whatever it is, that story, right? The story comes up. And the story is saying you have to stay in this box. And it thinks that you're still that 2-year-old or the 3-year-old or the 5-year-old. And so we go into our adult lives thinking that I have to have these you know, traits in order to survive. And usually the opposite of those traits we see around us in, you know, people or whatever, or experiences, or we judge them in others. So that's the first step, is just becoming really, really aware of what you are judging or what triggers you. It's really important to have a mentor or guide to take you through this, because the ego is going to trip you up. And trust me, I even went through a period of time where I was like, well, I know how to do shadow work. I can do it on myself. But it was just still taking me in circles. It just takes longer, and that's fine. But if you really just want to get, you know, into that manifestation, that state of flow, having the mentor to take you there also. Oh, I had it and I forgot it. Damn it. I had another. It was like so many things, ideas that came to my mind. Observing things neutrally, observing what you're judging. Ah, your dreams. So your dreams are also pointing you to where you are. Your psyche is sort of off balance. So it tries to overcompensate. So if you are like, no, my life's pretty great, nothing's going on, but you're having nightmares a lot, or you're having certain themes come up over and over again, that is an indication that there is something that wants to be brought above surface. So it wants to be brought into your awareness, writing down your dreams, even if you don't understand them. So keeping a journal and a pen on your nightstand, and whatever emotions come up, whatever images come up, just write them down. Because even just reading them and seeing them and acknowledging them is bringing it to your awareness, is making it conscious. Jung said, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you will think it's fate. So you will think that this is just the way life is. But the more you bring the unconscious content of your psyche to awareness, then the more you expand and you tap into the magic of life. And I had another one, but it'll come back to me later.
Can you talk about partnership and relationship? Because I know for myself, my marriage has been played a big role in terms of me becoming aware of my own shadows and my own unconscious patterns, things that I can't see, that I'm like, oh, okay. I've been living that way my whole life. And I just thought that was a normal way to be, not knowing that there is another way to be. And so Can you speak to relationships and what your observations are with how those can help us with our journeys?
Yeah. So until we become aware, we are projecting our shadow onto relationships. So male or female relationships. So our relationship with our mother is our first relationship with the world, right? It's our first experience and perception of how the world operates is our subjective personal relationship with our mother. And so that usually translates to we internalize that. So whatever experience we had with our mothers, we internalize that and we think that that is how the world works. That is how I must engage with women. That is how I perceive whether abundance exists or if it doesn't. Like if you think of Mother Earth, right? Mother Earth is abundant. It keeps giving. It's nurturing. It's carrying us. It is the material world, right? It's the material. It's the physical. Our relationship with our fathers is internalized as our relationship with our own divinity and God. And or spirituality. And so so what happens is that we internalize that, it's repressed, it's unconscious, and we go through our lives and we project it. We project it onto human beings. And they're a blessing because the people that trigger us, whether it's in a relationship, any relationship, it's a blessing in disguise because it's pointing to our unconscious and it's an opportunity to grow. And doing shadow work is, like I said, it's really looking at the traits of the person that irritate us or that annoy us. And it could be really subtle, particularly if it's a loved one or family member, we may not, we may just kind of like gloss over it and be like, oh, yeah, like she just does that sometimes, whatever. But over time, it compounds. And it's important to really assess it and look at how might I be that way sometimes or what is it that's so bad about being more outspoken or whatever it is, whatever trait it is we're judging in that person. But there is a stage of in the individuation journey that when we enter the collective unconscious, really when we have individuated significantly or integrated a lot of our personal shadow and we start to enter this, collective unconscious, we start to access archetypes. Archetypes are essentially, I describe it as like a template of personality types that we all have that are living within us, are active within us, but repressed. And you can access them as you start to step more and more into your true self. Because when you start to integrate the shadow aspects and you start to de-identify with this mask and persona that has carried you for half of your life, right? You go through that period of like, well, who the hell am I? Like, if I am not, a corporate professional, or if I am not just a doting good daughter, good girl, well, who am I, right? And so you want to start, you access those traits that are, visible in the warrior archetype, for example, the queen archetype, or the mystic archetype, and they all are active and living in us. Jung saw this as like different stages of life are encouraging us to integrate those archetypes, like the maiden, and the mother, the crone, who's the wise woman. These are, again, coming back to life is naturally taking us there, but we're just not really aware of it. And so a very important piece of individuating, which Eastern philosophy refers to, is the is inner union, divine union. So integrating our divine masculine. If you're a woman, if you identify as a woman, then you have, for the most part, repressed the internal divine masculine. And if you're a man, then you have repressed the internal divine feminine. And so that is a huge piece that when you integrate that, the anima and animus, which is what Jung called it, then you achieve wholeness, essentially. And through that wholeness, you are a creator, you're a powerful creator, and you can create from your soul, not just to get things. That's the thing. You know, a manifestation is not just to get the things that we want. It's really freeing our minds from the conditioning that made us think we wanted those things. And then when we realize, oh my God, it doesn't even matter if I achieve those things or not, and we're whole, I'm whole as I am, then, oh my God, it just starts coming in. You start magnetizing it.
I want to ask
It's like, are you going or who's going?
I'm like, where did I even go? Let's come back. Let's circle back.
It's awesome.
Oh, I do that all the time.
I wanted to ask a little bit about the, you know, the divine masculine feminine, because I personally am like, okay, that's something that I haven't really explored in depth. And how would we identify within ourselves, you know, and for me as well, like, what does that mean, my repressed masculine? We're a group of women here, and I don't know, maybe most of our listeners are women, but we could talk about the, or divine
masculine. There are some men,
Well, both. How do we recognize when we have, what is a repressed feminine for the men and a repressed masculine for the women? How do we identify that? How do we know that that's existing within us? And then how do we work with that? What's going on there to really come to this place of wholeness?
Whatever is showing up in your reality. Mm-hmm. So whatever is coming up for you, how do you perceive men? How do you perceive them, or the one man in your life? Or how do you perceive, you know, or what triggers you? Okay, let's say it is a man. Let's say you have a brother, okay, that like irritates the hell out of you. And like, you know, he just always triggers you, and he's like this way and that way. That is on some level showing you the shadow aspect of your internal masculine. So that's why it's imperative to do the shadow work first. You can't just skip to tapping into your divine masculine, because you need to unshackle, unlayer, unveil the conditioning that was placed there first. And that was based on your childhood conditioning, your childhood experience, or your, you know, there's also genetics. Genetics is a big factor, epigenetics, that I'm not even going to get into. But and we inherit certain beliefs, right? As a society, we inherit certain beliefs of men should be this way, women should be that way. Or yeah, we're conditioned on so many different levels. And so if you have a male figure as a woman that comes into your life, just notice how you observe it. But also, I'm talking about the negative stuff. But we also project our divinity onto the man we love. And that is the beauty of falling in love, right? And that's why in the first 2 years, every relationship is like, you know, butterflies and roses and unicorns, because they're seeing the divinity of the person. They're seeing the like, oh my God, this guy is the best. And then your friends are like, that guy, really? But it's like, we are projecting our divinity onto that person. And then the projection starts to fade. And you start to either see them for who they really are, or you start to project really your shadow. I mean, either way, we're projecting our shadow, because our divinity is also in our shadow. So it's when you come into this, when you start to go inward. And this is for my clients that have come to me. Let's say they've come to me because they're going through a major life transition, or they're creating a legacy. They've just sold their companies, or, you know, they're selling, they're focusing on career and their professional legacy. Inevitably, the relationship stuff comes up in our coaching, because they are still trying to fix the external. And the secret to changing the external is to go inwards. Is to go internal, because we're always projecting. We're always projecting everything. And so when you start to heal, which means to become whole, when you start to become more and more whole, or more and more aware internally, your external starts shifting automatically, because you're projecting something different. And so with uncovering your, as women, let's just talk about women, uncovering your internal, you know, masculine, your divine masculine, you will go through shadow work. You have to go through shadow work and understand why you see men the way you do, why you see relationships the way you do. And also you start to tap into the essence of who you are. So women just naturally, most women start to become more feminine. And more feminine in terms of, I don't mean like, you know, dressing cutesy and like getting mani-pedis. I mean, like, they start to receive more. They stop being controlling. And in this modern world, my gosh, even in the West, you know, we're all about like action, 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 do, productivity, hustle culture, right? You start to realize that's conditioning too. That's your conditioning too. And you make peace with it. When you make peace with it internally, then you start to really sink into your truth and the essence of who you are. And then you start to, I take my clients through a visualization of engaging with their divine masculine. And so that will help them with the internal union. And then they start to see their man completely change in behavior. Their relationship starts to change because they are, it's alive, right? I was telling you, it's this alive energy. They are molding and changing and making peace with, you know, the hate or the pain they've held on to, or the grief or the stories that they've held on to from their father. We don't even need to get into the past, but it could be showing, because the past is usually showing up in our present. So it could be that they've always had, you know, abusive relationships or harmful, you know, toxic relationships. They start to make peace with that. Holy crap, I've been opting in. You know, it's like this radical accountability and responsibility. Oh my gosh, I've been the one that's been choosing and tolerating poor behavior or tolerating no boundaries. And when you start to really integrate that energy, then you're starting to access the divine masculine more and more.
Mm. That's so empowering to recognize that we hold the keys to changing our relationships, right? It's not
someone, another person. Our world. Because when we change our world, it ripples out.
Yep, exactly. Wow. Yeah. I wanted to kind of go back to at the beginning, you talked about how, well, you've talked about it a bunch, how our society, our families, they are basically, the conditioning is what is defining us for much of our lives until we start to become more conscious and aware. For myself, when I left the United States, I quickly saw how much of what I thought was me was not me when it was no longer there. And it's like the program I was running was like, whoa, that was something else. And it's like, how wrong is it that like we're living under these, it's the matrix in a way, like, you know, we're living under this, these belief systems, these ways of being, this, it's an energy. Like it's, to me, it's this anxious energy that's like keeping us in the grind, keeping us trying to be something we're not, hiding who we really are. So for me, I'm like, oh, I had to, maybe I could have found that staying in the environment. But for me, I felt I had to leave in order to find myself. What's your experience been? Like, how do people do that while they're still living in the same soup that's like creating the inauthentic self?
That's a great question. And I know among the three of us, like travel is like our love, right? It's like one of our first loves, right? So we travel is an amazing way to individuate. And it's a fast fucking way to individuate and really get uncomfortable and to step out of the fishbowl, like you said. And that was experience I had when I lived abroad as well. But here's the kicker. And this is what I realized, because the people I was encountering abroad were living in their bubble and in their fishbowl. Mm. So they were conditioned in that bubble too, even though that bubble was like amazing to me. And it was not my conditioning, right? It was like Italy. Italy has its own conditioning on their society, right? Or it's, you know, perpetuated through family and traditions. And there's nothing bad about the matrix or whatever. There's nothing bad about conditioning. I really, truly, like, ironically, I was talking about Italy, but like, what's his name? He wrote the Divine Comedy, Dante. Dante is like Italy's version of Shakespeare. Mm. And so he basically wrote a trilogy about essentially talking about life. And he calls it the divine. He calls one is purgatory, which is that we create our own hell, which is what we would probably call the matrix, right? And that's like our own conditioning. So we just think this is like hell, and this is as good as life is going to get, essentially. And then, you know, we're in suffering all the time, and we're not really accepting things as, you know, the way they are. But he also had a book called The Divine Comedy. The way I see it is like we're one grand experiment. And like, what if this was our journey to, you know, be born at whole and as a soul, and then forget that we're whole and this soul, and have the experiences that we're having, and to keep having repetitive patterns and cycles and frustrating, you know, moments and experiences to then challenge ourselves to pick up a self-help book, like a Wayne Dyer book, or to say, and it's all based on feeling. So it's like, what is it that excites you? What is it that you're jealous of in someone else, right? In this day of Instagram and influencers, right? Everyone's obsessed with these travel influencers. And I always call my friends out on it. I'm like, instead of stalking other people traveling, why don't you just go out and do it yourself? What are you afraid of? All of these things that like are like lighting us up and we're longingly, wistfully looking at that other people are doing. It's an opportunity for us to say like, wait a minute, why am I stopping myself? Why can't I do something or something similar? It doesn't have to be like extreme like me, like quit corporate and move abroad. But why don't you make it a goal to go to a new country every year? And so I know we talked about travel. So if people really can't even travel, then life is showing us our conditioning all the time. Again, it's in the triggers. It's in the emotions. What has an emotional charge? Either negatively, like, I can't stand this person, or positively, like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. Like, I'm so envious of this person. That is showing us our soul. All the time. Inquire into it. Go inward. Ask, like, I wonder why. Like, or what is it about this person that really irritates me? It's a step. It doesn't have to be like, you know, all the way up, jumping up to the ladder. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like step by step, just self-inquiry, observing yourself, meditation. And, you know, thank God it's really becoming this massive movement now, yoga, meditation. I mean, yoga means union, actually. So yoga is one pathway becoming, you know, of accessing wholeness. I personally think, you know, Jungian psychology was like the best way to understand how the mind works. When you're sitting in stillness, if you can sit in stillness and silence, you start to observe the voice, the stories, because there's the chatter. And then there's the part of you that's observing the chatter. You're creating space. Journaling, writing down your thoughts, doing thought dumps is also helpful because you're creating that space of like, wait, I'm not just these stories. These are just stories. I'm also this part. Who's a part of me that's observing the stories? And so you start to recognize that you are not just your job. You are not just your marital status or your single status. You're not just how many kids you've had. You're not just the degrees behind your name. You are not just, those things are part of you, but those are expressions of you. And there's a part of us that is yearning for more, for good reason, because it wants you to take a step towards more.
Yeah, amazing. I believe, you know, curiosity is the key. You know, when we feel anything, you know, how can we be more curious about it? And, you know, really, that is where we can begin to unpack more and more of what it is we are here to work through, who we are here to be. And it is just like you said, like meditation, I am such a massive fan, as you said, to strengthen that ability and awareness of us that that's a thought. I don't need to play with that. I don't need to, you know, be, yeah. And I don't have to like.
Why do we believe everything that's going through our minds? We have 60 to 80,000 thoughts every day. And it's 90%, over 90% are the same as yesterday. That's why we keep recreating the past over and over. Mm-hmm. Question your thoughts. Is this really true? Is that really true what I'm thinking about that person? That they didn't call me back because da 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 da, or they, you know, that guy didn't text me back. You know, we make all these assumptions. You know, that's our conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're coming up to time, but I just wanted to ask Shadi, do you have anything that you want to share with our listeners that you think are really key points for them to take away when they begin to tap into this curiosity, tap into shadow, listen to the expression of their soul, what, you know, this path that we're talking about through their awakening journeys. And then if you'd like to share a little bit about the work you do in case that's an avenue for someone to really expand into more of the truth of who they are.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I mean, your podcast is called Awakening Conversations, right? So I imagine on some level, everyone who's tuning in knows that they're going through something, right? And going through an awakening. So what I would say is it's okay. Whatever you're going through is exactly what you're supposed to be going through for your growth and your evolution. Watch how you judge yourself too. It's, you know, particularly if those of us who are naturally ambitious and high achievers, we can apply that to our personal development too. And then it can be like this thing like, I'm not evolved enough, or I'm not spiritual enough, right? And then that's ego. That's the ego trying to trip us up, right? I would also say invest in yourself, whatever it is. And whatever is resonating for you, follow it, pull on that, tug on that thread, explore it. Like you said, with curiosity, curiosity is key to creating. We're here to create and like outside of our conditioning. That's all, right? So that's what I would say. And having compassion for yourself, no matter where you're at, if you're going through a hard time, if you're in a transition, if particularly if you're very self-aware, sometimes that is another way the ego is trying to keep us stuck and from, because the ego doesn't want growth. The ego is very fear-based. It doesn't want growth. So even when we are on a personal development journey, the ego is going to be like, you're not doing enough. You're not, you need to journal more. You need to have vision boards. You need to do this. You need to do that. You're not manifesting enough. Da, 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 da. Just observe anything that doesn't feel expansive or true. Question it. And I actually offer a complimentary shadow work session for anyone who is interested. If they're feeling stuck or if they're noticing they have repeat patterns, I can take them through a shadow work session. It's pretty effective and powerful in one session. And I have a coaching program. So I have a 3-month program and a 6-month program for anyone who's interested. I usually work with people who are very self-aware, who have been on the personal development journey for a long time. They've tried everything. I am also an emotion code practitioner. So I incorporate energy work into the talk coaching that we do. Emotion code essentially is the modality of helping people release the emotional baggage that is in their way. So a lot of that comes through in our talk coaching, doing the unconscious work, dream analysis, doing the visualizations. But also this is like an extra boost that I've incorporated and folded into my coaching practice, the energy work. It just makes it a lot easier for them to pursue their passions, their goals, their true selves. I also offer, so if it's okay with you, I'd like to offer a free meditation for anyone who signs up for a shadow work session. I'd love to offer that. Send you guys the link. I've been told my meditations are like magic. So I'd love to send a like a powerful meditation, maybe to integrate a shadow aspect. I can share that with them, that they can listen.
That would be amazing.
So my link tree is, yeah, how you can access, how you can set up a shadow work, a session with me. And whoever does that, I'll send them the meditation.
Well, Shadi, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been an amazing conversation. I feel like we could probably like keep going and talk for more. But I think this is an amazing place for people to start to understand more of their unconscious, their shadow, how to work with it, and really how to begin to observe it to empower themselves to feel, you know, more whole and really bring more of the truth of who they are forth. And then, you know, really what that means is we didn't quite get into it, but the manifestation, once we're really opening that lens.
Whether or not you're manifesting, it's like when you're whole, feeling whole, you're feeling fulfilled. So it doesn't even matter if you're manifesting the things you want. And that's when they come faster. I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be really helpful for many people. So thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who listened. We'll join you in the next episode.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you haven't already, please do subscribe to your favorite podcast platform or to our YouTube channel so you can be notified when new episodes are released. To learn more about today's guest and view all the resources mentioned in this episode, visit our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and visit the episode page for this conversation. You can also go directly to the episode page by clicking the link in the show notes, wherever you are listening or watching this. Here, you can also leave your questions, comments, or feedback so we can create more episodes that you love. And if you'd like to be a guest to share your own awakening journey with our listeners, or you have a business or offering that supports others going through their awakenings, head to our website, theawakeningconversations.com, and click on Be a Guest, and we'll be in touch. Until next time, take care.